Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Hey everybody, welcome along. Great to have you with us for the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco. I'm Aaron Noonan. It is great to have you along for the ride. Now this week we're wrapping up a two-part chat with Team 18 Supercars team owner Charlie Schwerkopf. But before we get stuck into that, and before I tease and tell you what's on this episode, I want to quickly just tell you about something that I'd love to have your support on. Get behind us on this one. The Castrol Motorsport News podcast. We launched it late last year as part of the Motorsport Podcast Network. It's up and firing. Andrew Van Leeuwen, Stefan Bartholomeus. Every Tuesday, the boys bring you the latest in news and views on Aussie and world motorsport. Subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can listen to it wherever you listen to your pod, or in fact, wherever you're listening to this podcast, you can listen to that one too. Subscribe and you won't miss out. You'll get the notification when every episode goes live on a Tuesday of every week. Now, on to this week's episode of the V8 Sleuth podcast with Charlie. In part one, we covered a lot of his early business career, of his time in Dick Johnson Racing. But in this part two, we cover his Team 18 era, about aligning with Ford Performance Racing and then with Walkinshaws, starting from scratch in 2016 and everything right through to now in 2022. He'll also tackle your National Motor Racing Museum couch racer questions. So here we go, buckle up. It's time to start part two of Charlie Schwerkopf of the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco. I've got a bunch of questions here. I'm going to get to those very soon, but there's a few more things to cover off here because we've kind of only got to 2010-11 here. So you leased the wreck back to DJR for a couple of years. That underpins the James Moffat car. So for 13, you do a deal with FPR to run a customer car there. So it's Car of the Future starting up there. So it's Geldwen and it's Alex Davison who drives for you, because Will's there as well at FPR by that stage. So was there any other option on where you would go and what you would do? Why'd you end up at FPR?
Yeah, look, obviously it was messy from 20, where I was going to be in 2011. I was had a deal done at 2011 to go there, and it all fell over, of course, when my world went upside down. So, no, look, that was really, I was honourable to them. Hey, listen, if I ever get a wreck and if I ever do anything, I'll be back there and do that. So placed Alex there and the Geldwen car, and it looked pretty cool, and off we go.
I think it was a podium at Phillip Island.
Correct.
Which was the 60-60 races we used to do. Remember where we
that's right.
Burn around for 60Ks, then we'd all stand around and look at one another for a bit, and then we'd go burn around for another 60Ks. It didn't survive, did it, that format?
It didn't.
Well, one of the supercar things that we've tried over the years that didn't quite manage to survive. Change for that at the end of the year. So was the intent for Alex to stay there?
Yeah, it was a bit of both,
Didn't happen though. Jack Perkins came along the next year. So
there was some funding Jack brought as well. You know, there wasn't a lot of money that you could, you know, I had to pay a big fee to FPR back then, and I had to make it stack up, obviously. Mm. So Jack and I did a deal. I think we had Cam Waters as an enduro driver. That was his
very
first
young
stint.
Cam Waters,
very, very young Cam. Tried to snivel him after that, but didn't work. Someone else got him. But we put a deal together with Jack in 2014.
Am I right in remembering that you drove the car that year?
You are 100%
like
right.
A ride day or something like that?
It was
a
ride day in Eastern Creek, and there's photos. I'm in Jack's suit, and we both had the same – Jack had two helmets, and you had to pick who was Jack and who was me.
Did you have the glasses on or not?
No,
oh, well, I didn't. It's clearly you if you ain't got the glasses.
I think he might have taken his off. But that was a great experience because I love driving.
Is that the only time you've ever driven?
It is actually the only time because obviously you only get three test days and then the ride days are busy. But I never forget going down the straight and I'm thinking, I'm going okay here. And then I reckon it might have been Wind Cup that just goes straight past. And I think I'm about 20 seconds off the lap. So I think I'll give that away. But it was a lot of fun.
That's cool.
The raw power and everything. It was really cool.
You didn't take Jack for a ride, did you?
I did.
You took him for a ride.
I needed driver coaching and training change and everything. And where to go and all that sort of stuff. So it was really special.
It's cool. It's not very often that team owners get the chance to drive their own cars. I know Ryan Story's had a dabble of it. I'm not sure if Roland. I think Roland might have a long, 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 long time ago.
Yeah,
but it's pretty rare.
It is rare.
It's common that they might end up keeping one of their cars.
Yeah,
and but maybe drive it way back, way later on. But to drive it in the period that it's a current car is actually quite
special.
Rare.
Yeah. I'd love to drive one of the current cars. I'd love to drive it.
You own it. Why can't you make this happen? Seriously, you've got two of them now. For crying out loud.
That's it. So I'll probably do that at the end of the year at a ride day or something like that.
Yeah, what's the end of the year of this year? You're not going to run it next year. So
yeah.
There you go. I've just given you perfect
excuse
to go and do it.
It won't be with Jack Perkins, though.
No, he's got his own.
Yeah, that's it. He's got plenty of them.
He's fine. So for 15, you go to Walkinshaws. Was that always the plan?
It was a better deal. No, it was. I was staying at Tickford for one more year. I had a sponsor. Geldman actually went basically private equity, and the president, who was a very good mate, vice president, he left, and they thought the sponsorship's not worth it. We're going to cut our contract, and it was really messy right at the end. And so then I had a bit of a conflict with sponsors. I got Fuchs Lubricants on board, which is still on board today, which is great. And that was a clash for their brand, Castrol. Mm. So I thought, far out, what am I going to do here? Walkinshaw came up with a good deal because they had only three cars. Of course, they sold a license back then, and they thought it's much easier to run four cars. So they'd like to, ironically, I tried to buy the license back then, and here I am back there.
It's one big sort of circle.
Circle
world,
that goes
really
around. Yeah. So I ended up back there with the fourth car, and we got Lee Holdsworth. And, again, that was a bit of a tough year for getting sponsorship round by round and Fuchs started as a whole car for the first three rounds and had to find more sponsorship and we got it through and it was a tough year on the track though. James got all the favourite bits and pieces of the car, James Courtney. He was the golden child there and so you got all the good gear and so I was pretty frustrated and Adrian was running the team and it was a bit clunky and messy. I was a customer car. I think Tim Slade was there.
He was in the super cheap car.
Yep. And
Garth
and
James,
and we were the.
So
sort
you felt
of
like you were the fourth.
Poor,
I remember
poor
talking
cousins.
To Lee at the time. You felt like the fourth.
Correct. We were the fourth. We were last in the line, and never forget at Tassie, we were going really well. Can you move over? Move over. James Courtney's coming through, and I said, "We're not moving over." And our engine was.
You don't own me. I'm my
correct.
Wreck. Yeah,
and
I'm paying
I thought,
you to run our car here.
I thought there's got to be a better way. There has to be a better way. This is a mug's game. Being a customer and not treated like the number one customer. I was really the number four car in the team.
Mm. So that's what made you go, right, we're going to do our own thing.
I said to Lee, this is it. We're going to start the own team. Are you in? He said, yep, 100%, I'm in. So I think it was a Pukekohe. I decided I've got to put a team together in a real hurry. I'm not going to renew my deal with Walkinshaw. I'm going to start again and I ring Roland Dane and I said, who's a team manager that's out there that knows the sport? Get me going as a team manager. And we came up with Jeff Gregg. So we met with Jeff straight after New Zealand and we formed a team. And with Hall, he had a lot of connections still in the game. And I rented a factory in Dandenong. Georgie Smith came along as a fabricator. Mm. And we got an apprentice, young mechanic, who joined as well in that first year, who's still with the team now, young Reese, and we got a few guys together and we started off on our own. It was a tough gig building.
Did you underestimate it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was the biggest thing I've ever done of starting with nothing, completely nothing. I had to buy a car off 888 and decided it was a customer program there off 888 of buying their equipment and trying to work it through. You look at the Groves, what they've just done. They've bought a complete team off Kelly's. It's all there. Mm. And what Team Sydney or Zabiris has done as well. It was all there type of thing. I've started, I don't know when the last person has started from scratch. I'm not sure. Completely from scratch.
Rather than buying
Blanchard, I guess?
Yeah, probably that's as close as, yeah, I think that's probably, and that's a rarity. There's not many. Usually when teams get sold, it's the wrecks and it's the bits and it's the equipment and it's, you know, might be a car or two or, you know, whatever's the thing going. But, yeah, to do it from scratch, you love a challenge, huh, don't you?
Love a challenge.
Did you wonder a couple of months into that,
why am I doing this? Why can't I just
sponsor a car somewhere, sit in the corporates and enjoy my weekend and go home and not deal with all this crap? You know, it's hard enough to run the business that you know, the Waverley Forklifts business with everything that you've got going on, and then you add all this on top of it as well.
Madness.
Why would you ask yourself there, why am I doing this stuff?
Well, one of the reasons is the sponsors and formed a relationship, which I still have got today. Preston Hire came on for the Enduros in 2015.
When you had Sebastian Bourdais co-drive.
Correct.
Yeah.
He was a great guy. Still in contact with Seb. But we got them on the Enduro and then we did a deal of his naming rights partner. And that was great. And so we had Preston Hire as naming rights for 16, 17,
18.
And 18, that's right, 3 years. And they were great. And there was business dealings there as well with Forklifts, et cetera, opened a lot of doors and it was really, really good. So, and he's still a great mate today. And
he was up at Sydney Motorsport Park in the first round. Walking around. Still loves the sport and still connected to it.
Yeah. And so that was great to get him on board. And that was the thing. And there was sponsors there. Back in 14, we got Seiko watches using their Pulsar brand. And you feel obliged, all these sponsors, Manitou Forklifts and Fuchs Oils and a lot of these sponsors that came on board, they came for the journey, for a long journey, and you feel obliged to let's make it work for them and get the exposure, get their business, get the return of investment. And I love dealing with all these people and all these sponsors. So I thought, you know what, I'll give it a crack. And, yeah, it was a tough gig, but yeah, I'm glad I've done it. I'm really pleased.
Was rolling that car out for that first test day, practice session, Adelaide, whatever it was that year, is that a highlight? You know, winning the championship with the Jim Beam stuff and some of the stuff that's happened since then is clearly high up there. But is anything compete with that? That's got to be
right up there.
You don't get a trophy for it. It's not like on a stat sheet anywhere. But that exertion, and only you and your people know what it took to do that. Is that probably your proudest moment standing there?
Very proud. Coming from nothing, buying a car. I had to buy a transporter, which was a pretty average transporter in the beginning because there was none around and everything was secondhand to try and build. I like to build up and not overcommit. And so all the gear we had to get, you know, we just scraped through just by the skin of our teeth. I had no tools and we did a tool deal with Stanley Black & Decker, who's still with us today, obviously. Sidchrome, we got some Sidchrome tools. No money in the team, but just we got
you
tools.
You needed tools anyway.
We needed tools. But, it was really, really proud doing that test day and buying chassis number 30. That was the chassis off 888. And, very special.
Chassis 30 is their first car of the future that they built. So that's the one that appeared in the camouflage livery during 2012 that was the Xbox wildcard car with Andy Prio and Mattias Ekström with its Ludo straight line speed at Bathurst 2013 that everyone still talks about to this very day. So I think it was sort of their spare, wasn't it?
It was their spare, and I had to really talk Roland into it, which was great. Look, I'll have to sell you my spare. That's the only car.
That's all I got.
That's it. Mm. But, you know, I own the wreck. I've either got to sell the wreck or get on and just do this. So I was sick of being a customer. I was sick of being the last car as a customer car. It's time that I really build and make a team. And I thought, you know what, let's do it. So we did it. And while we didn't get really the results on track, I don't know where we finished that year, I can't remember, but it was still a massive achievement to start from nothing and build up. You know, we had plenty of top tens, but we got it up there.
Every lap in under a minute. Every move made to matter. Every decision impacting the outcome of the race. Supercars in Perth. Every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars, unforgettable.
The bit that wasn't in the script was the crash in Darwin with Lee, where he got busted up and parked up for, you know, what, three or so rounds and busted bones and all sorts of stuff. It was a pretty nasty one. And, of course, the car as well. I mean, the bloke is the special important bit out of it all, but then the other part is your one car that you got is Cactus. And then you had to go and stitch together a deal with the Kosteckis, I think it was, wasn't it, to use their car to fill in as the Team 18 Preston High car with Kurt Kosteki driving it.
Correct.
It looked like your car, wasn't your car, because you're waiting for one to come on down the line.
We were very fortunate the Kosteckis were doing Super 2 or Dunlop Series back then, and we did a deal with them for Kurt to drive, and remember getting their car, and because Chassis 30 was pretty bad. It was really bad.
Is it still around?
It is still around. It's in a shipping container. No, it's still around. Still got the logbook and everything, so it's still around, but we haven't repaired it. We were going to make it a ride car. We were going to put it back to, you know, get it all going, but we're just too many other projects. Mm. But and there's been a few people that want to buy it, and we just haven't done anything yet. But yeah, it was pretty banged up in the left side when it hit the wall at Darwin. So I thought, wow, what are we going to do here?
Welcome to team ownership.
That's it. And this is our first year, and we've basically written a car off that can't be repaired. And
that cost cash.
Big cash.
You know, I know teams budget for crash damage during a year, but
hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
So it was tough. It was really, really tough. So, but anyway, we got Kurt there, which was great, and he filled in that spot for us.
So the Preston Hire Team 18, because I think was it when you created the team standalone as opposed to being customer car, that's where the Team 18
correct it was
banner sort of started.
Yeah, obviously, you know, I heavily involved at TJR with number 18, and that was the rec number at the time, and
that's probably what our listeners don't understand is that the racing entitlements contract used to be called the franchise. It's called
correct.
So it's the charter now, really under the new ownership. That's your piece of ownership of the pie, and the number, the racing car number, goes with it.
Correct.
So, I mean, teams do trade numbers and do deals on numbers,
yep, but
that's your right. And I know, you know, I still see it on social sometimes that people get the grumbles that you've got 18, that should be at DJR. But the fact is that the number goes with the wreck, and that's just how it's always been.
That's right. And of course, that I think that chassis number is 18
on the car.
I still remember the cars coming in at that time. There was three cars, two cars and a chassis, of course, and it was 16, 18 and 19 from memory.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think 19
we never got
spare.
17, and Dick always wanted 17, I think. But anyway, I made 18. And
Stevie J's car was 16.
Correct.
And the spare one was 18. Oh, I think the spare one was actually 21.
Was
from memory. Yeah, that's the one they built up for James Moffat a couple of years later.
Yeah. So the number 18, I just stuck. It was good, and I thought, I'll just keep it. And then I changed the name of the team to Team 18, and it stuck, and everyone knows.
You can't change the number now.
That's it. So it became Team 18.
So we've got ZB comes along as well. Then the relationship with Lee. Was Lee frustrated that things weren't going where he wanted to go? What happened there?
Yeah, he felt the team wasn't giving him everything. He wasn't, you know, this is – so I got to remember 2018.
That was the first year of ZB, yeah.
Yeah, and I bought a good car off 888. It was a one-year-old car. That was Jamie's, I think. I can't remember now. Chassis 44 or something, 48.
Jeez, we're doing all the numbers today.
I know.
We've got them all covered. This is impressive.
But, yeah, Lee was frustrated. We weren't – I wasn't giving him everything that he wanted. He just – he was very frustrated, and being a single car too was really, really hard.
Were you really floating on your own there? Like you weren't. I think everyone thinks you're getting every Jamie Wynn Cup, Shane Van Gisbergen, Craigland setup sheet, and that's not the case. It can be the case in certain deals, but you weren't in that deal at the
correct.
Time. Yeah, because that comes with dollars. Like you got to spend big dollars to do that stuff.
Absolutely. So he felt we weren't delivering. We just weren't delivering, and so he moved on. The end of 2018.
Yep.
Correct.
Yep.
and which is sad. Lee's still a mate now. He's you know,
Bathurst winning.
He is, yes. Mm. He's done a great job, and it's good to see him on the grid now. But so that was that, and then so yeah, I was pretty frustrated at the end of 18. We're not getting the results we should have, and we had the gear and everything, but it just wasn't clicking. So 2019 was a massive year. I've either got to get out or not so much get out. I've got to really get a really good driver that I think can take it all the way, invest in the team even more, and bigger sponsor, bigger money, everything like that. And so the world really changed then for the better, and we got Frosty on board and some really key people as well.
What did it take to get Frosty over the line? How did that start? Was it a – am I right in remembering it was a trip on a plane coming back from a race somewhere? Hey, what are you doing next year? Which is sort of funnily enough how most of
how,
these things start.
How these deals start. I mean, we're going to Perth, having a chat to him, going to Perth and we're sitting up the front of the plane, which is nice. You always use those upgrades for those, for those tickets there on the way to Perth, long haul. And he was a bit frustrated at the time. He, you know, he had Chaz there and it was Cam. What is it?
Yeah, I don't know. Cam was there by that stage.
Cam,
yeah.
And so he was frustrated and he was looking to, you know, finish off his career with one team and have a different direction, different cars and make something and believe in something and learn new things. And so we cemented a deal, which was really exciting. And he had a lot of contacts that he could bring, and we got Phil Keed on board. And then, of course, I remember talking with Renee and who's your sponsor? And I said, I haven't got a sponsor yet, but I'm gonna get a good sponsor. I had a few on the
go.
So
he signed up without a sponsor?
He did.
Oh, that's...
He had belief in me, which is really good, and I always get sponsors. I'm really good at getting good sponsors and really good partnerships and delivering. And I had a few on the go. You've always got to have a few on the go.
You can't just have one on the go, yeah.
And our very good friends at Stanley Black & Decker, they came on board. They were really excited to get Frosty as well, and we cemented the Irwin Bunnings relationship back in the start of 2019, which is still current today, which is fantastic. It's a great partnership. They love it, and we deliver really well for them, and they love Frosty, of course. He's a great family man, and that's what Bunnings is all about as well, and Irwin Tools.
But if he's a Bunnings family man, can he cook a sausage? That's the mega important bit I want to know.
He's got a pizza oven.
Mate, what?
He's got a pizza oven.
Seriously.
That's it. That's
I want to lob to my local Bunnings in Mentone one day and see Frosty whipping up a storm on the barbecue.
There is a video clip going around. You'll see it there. That because we do a fair bit. We do a lot. We did trolley dashes and anyway, we did all sorts of stuff. But he did do an intro wearing his helmet. Then he's trying to put a sausage, you know, through his helmet. So, but no, look, Bunnings is great. New and a fantastic part of the Stanley Black & Decker group. And so, yeah, that was our start in 2019. And away we go with a new revamped Team 18.
Did you feel you need to go to two cars to really make the most of, you know, the input and the investment, bringing Frosty in, you know, 888 deals? To have two, you kind of need that to be able to, you know, really take a swing at it.
Yeah, look, I was frustrated with the pit stops. You were relying on other people as well.
Which a lot of fans still don't understand how that works. But
correct.
If you're... You know, the third car of a three-car team and the third car of another three-car team, you get put together. Or if you're a single, you get put together and it's a composite picker, although Tim Slade this year, Tim Blanchard's team, they're their own thing, but they've had to spend more money to have more crew. But it's basically a cost-saving scenario over the journey, hasn't it?
Absolutely. But I was most of the time pitted with Brad Jones and it was I'd always go cook at Brad all the time. Brad, your pit stops are perfect, but when my car comes along, it always gets stuffed up, always. The wheel nut'd fall off or whatever, and it'd ruin our race or whatever, and I'd argue with Brad. and Brad's a good mate, so but it was very frustrating. You've got to control your destiny in this sport, and so I've just got to buy another wreck and I've just got to go racing with two cars and make it a proper two-car team that we can challenge and do things. And that was my goal for 2020, to get to two cars.
And then a bit of stuff happened in the world in 2020. So we shut down. We all shut down. Everything went weird. What was and we've just come, as we record this, we're about to go to Albert Park, but as this airs, it's just after Albert Park. So 2 years on from that weird Friday where we all wandered out of that track like we didn't know what was coming next because we really didn't, what was the feeling here? What was the first feeling, and did you get a grasp of how serious it became so quickly in terms of keeping staff employed, keeping the business running, keeping the team running? You know, you've got a lot of people who rely and depend upon, not just in Raceland here where we are at Team 18, but the broader business as well. You've got a lot of people that rely on their gig, what they do here.
Absolutely. Look, as we said before, you know, we helped set up the Grand Prix and supply all this equipment, and we've got the two cars now I'm really proud of, and both cars are the same naming rights sponsor. One's DeWalt and one's Irwin. So we've got Scotty Pye on board now, and this is start of 2020, and invested heavily in also an activation trailer for DeWalt as well. And we've got this great big infrastructure. This is fantastic. I'm really pumped and really excited. And off we go to the Grand Prix, and then on that Friday morning I got a call pretty early to say this isn't going to go ahead. There's all this COVID stuff, and Formula One drivers have pulled out and they've left. You know, everyone didn't think they left, but they actually left. And I'll never forget, we're cancelled. The whole race is cancelled, the whole thing. And
surreal.
Your forklifts are going to start working a lot earlier instead of Sunday night and packing things up. They're going to start now. And I was actually pretty scared at the time because you didn't know what was going on. It was the unknown. And eventually I had 500 forklifts come back after the Grand Prix. There's 500 forklifts, and we've got staff on 3 days a week and then down to 2 days a week nationally, and a lot of mouths to feed. And fortunately the government at the time helped us with JobKeeper and all that sort of stuff. But it was scarier than when the recession happened. When I first took over Waverley Forklifts back in the 80s, we had to have a recession, and the new forklifts came back then, but there was only 25 came back. But I had 500 machines come back, and I was shit scared, to be honest. It was the unknown, and I remember sitting in the boardroom up at Waverley, what do we do? You know, the whole thing. And all this gear, we're getting dehires after dehires, but we're a solid company, and we kept pushing hard, and eventually it bottomed out in about June, July, and they all started going back again. We kept racing. It was really, really tough on the crew to be racing out of the state. You know, we were away for 4 months. It broke some people in the team. It was it was cruel. It was hard on partners, and it was really, really tough for the Victorian teams to be away for 4 months.
That was big.
It was massive.
I think we're going to look back on that if we one day we do some books, maybe we do the supercar history book. That period of 2020 where for 4 or 5 months, you know, if we did the headcount, your team and, well, you know, all the Melbourne-based teams that went away for that period, you know, might have been, I don't know, 70 people, 80, 90, 100, whatever it was, however many people that was. If that hadn't happened, we've got a very different sport right now.
Absolutely.
Because you've got to keep racing to keep the money coming from Fox Sports, from sponsors, from partners, team partners, series partners. The whole thing doesn't work if the wheels aren't rotating, literally. I shudder to think where we might be had we not been able to get going again.
Yeah.
And what the sacrifice all those people made. I think we owe them all, not a beer, but probably plenty of slaps, really.
I know. And to be on that road, you know, it's the commitment from our staff. I think if I asked them now, you're going to go away for 4 months.
Again? Well, because they didn't know at the time.
They didn't know.
Yeah.
No. And we all had to pack up right at the last minute.
To get over the border.
Correct.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to be shut. And it's just ludicrous. You think about all this now with the rules and what we had to do and quarantining and all that sort of stuff. You forget about it pretty quick, but it was tough. It was tough on the people. But then it flowed through to sponsors. It was hard. We couldn't activate. We couldn't do, you know, what we had to do for the sponsors, you know. It was just TV, and there was no corporate hospitality. There
couldn't
was
do a
nothing.
Ride day.
We couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
And we're still catching up on a lot of that, but we couldn't deliver. We had this massive activation centre. It was
I remember seeing it. I came and did your launch that year.
Correct. And it was like state of the
hands
art.
On DeWalt, have a go at this saw and
all that sort all of stuff. And it was a fantastic thing. It really we couldn't use it. We used it once in 2020 at Adelaide and for the start of the race. And that's all we used it for. And we've invested all this And ironically, we only used it once in 21, which was Townsville as well. And then, and that was it, which is a shame. Anyway, it is getting used this weekend. It's going to the Grand Prix here today at the Grand Prix, which is really exciting. And we've got it out again and doing a big activation for DeWalt, which is great.
Good to hear. Not tucked away in a shed, never to be seen again. No. Never to be seen again. Are you happy with where you're at the last couple of years performance-wise? I mean, everyone wants to go and win every single race. Are you seeing progression? Are you seeing the KPIs that are within these walls, are they going in the right way? Are you happy with where you're heading?
No, you want to be winning. You want to be better.
You can't win every race.
I'll tell you what, it'll be great to just win one.
Okay, right, yeah.
So, yeah, look, it's been tough. You know, it's a tough sport, as we all know, and it's so competitive. You know, we were really proud for Scotty to get three podiums at Darwin. That was really good. And it's been so, so close so many times. You look at Darwin last year, you know, Frosty's on the front row and we had a little gremlin. There's our luck. I know you make your own luck, but we just seem to get that little bit of bad luck everywhere and it just trips you over so many times. And, you know, we've just come out of Tasmania and it got red flagged. And both our cars were, you know, basically the fastest cars in the first sector. And you think, I wish luck could go our way sometimes. And it'll happen. You know it will. But we're there or thereabouts all the time, you know. But we came out of Tassie 5th, 6th, 7th. And then, you know, with that close sometimes, no, I'm not happy. We've got to be better. I want to deliver podiums and like everyone does and get it up there and I was really hoping for Gen 3 to be starting this soon, and I think it resets a lot of things. And so we've got to wait another year for that. So that'll be exciting, and I think it will reset, you know, some things. And I want to be up there.
When you say reset things, we saw when we reset the cars last time, Car of the Future, the mixture of winners in that 13 year was still the same guy won the championship in Jamie, but – we had a young Scotty McLaughlin at GRM win. We saw Brad Jones's blokes win. Correct. Chazzy Mostert at DJR, FBR were winning. HRT did a little bit. You know, there was
they haven't had 10 years. You know, Triple Eight has had 10, 15 years of developing this car, and it's the same basic car, and have developed and developed. And I'm a customer of there, very close, and getting everything as, you know, we are getting everything the same as them. That close, and they know their cars better than we'll ever know them. But it's a full reset.
Press reset button, and everyone's kind of back to a much more level. Do you see that's the opportunity now?
Correct.
For teams like yours that have been trying to get that next step to actually get fast tracked a little bit here.
Correct. Each team's got their model, and I've got to be related to someone or something, and that's Triple Eight, and. And my model works. It stacks up. It's good. But, yeah, I'm really excited. I cannot wait to get the new car. One, it looks good, but I think our performance will be right up there. We've got great drivers and we've got the resources to deliver.
When do you get your hands on your first new one?
Yeah, I'm excited. I, as with everything in supply chain world, it's going to be slow. I don't think we'll get it to the end of the year. We were hoping, obviously, you know, the ultimate goal was mid-year. You can do the odd test here and all that sort of stuff. But, no, I think we're way behind. Frosty's just had a drive at Tassie and loved the car, and he said it's good. I think Scotty's going to have a drive at Winton. So Scotty wants to wait until it's getting closer and closer to
– to being the final
the final car. Yeah. And so that's exciting. So, yeah, no, and I think that – I'm going Camaro. I think it's a sexy-looking car. It looks bloody fantastic.
And no, they both look great. They do. The Mustang's going to change before the final thing. But, I mean, there was really no – in my mind, there's no other way that supercars could have gone in terms of what the cars are next. What's the GM car? You know, we're not going to go and throw everything away here and start again with some other category that's, you know, completely not got any roots in what we do. So –
no, can't wait. Bring it on.
Australian Muscle Car Magazine is one of the most respected voices in motoring media. There's been over 140 issues and thousands of stories published in the last 22 years, from the amazing muscle car machines of the past to the present and the stars that steered and built them. AMC has something for everyone. Delve into the heritage of homegrown high performance now at musclecarmag.com.au.
Before we finish, National Motor Racing Museum, which some of your cars have been up there over the years.
Yes.
Is a great friend of ours, great friend of the industry. Yep. Brad Owen and his team up there do an awesome job.
Brad's a ripper guy.
He is. They're open 6 days a week. Don't go on Tuesdays. Not open. You can go on Tuesdays, but the doors won't open. But if you want to check their opening times, go to the museum's Bathurst website or the museum's Facebook page. They're always posting what's coming or going there. So they bring us our Couch Racer questions from the fans. And I think you've actually answered one or two of these in our chat as we've gone anyway. But I'll barrel through it here. Kevin McCullough's question, this is a really interesting one. We kind of touched on the business side of it before. As a team owner, what's the real payoff? So he doesn't understand sometimes in supercar teams how they can make it stack up from an economy point of view. He says the economy of motorsport's often lost on people unless they're actively involved in the industry. And if a team can't run at a profit, he doesn't understand the reason for running it. But I think that the point here is, and you give me what the take is from your end, it's not that simple as just the race. It doesn't sit on its own as this entity on its own because it lives, for you, in your case, in a business makeup of Waverley and what it levers backwards and forwards and what it delivers, the opportunities, the business, you know, just what you've talked about with picking up deals for, you know, other partners in race teams and Waverley forklift deals. How would you respond to that, or how would you sort of explain it to the layman to understand kind of all this motor racing stuff costs a shitload of money? Absolutely. How do you make it make sense is probably the distillation of the question.
So at the end of the year, if I've broken even or made just a smidgen, I'm thrilled to bits.
Yep.
Because normally I have a bit of fun. If it's all going well, that's a minor part for me. I'm employing some people, but the big thing is the business side of things. You know, I do so much business with Toyota Forklifts, which love, they've got a sponsor or do something for return on investment, and they're on the car, Manitou Forklifts. We've got Fuchs Lubricants. They sell their oil to me and other partners, and they're growing as well. It opens doors everywhere, and it really does stack up for me. It really does, and it's a great business. And as I said, the doors that it can open, motorsport, that it is incredible. Mm. And so we've done a lot of business out of supercars, our corporate suites and doing deals and also people are going to the website and know that I'm involved in supercars and they want to rent forklifts because they know what we do. So,
and have you had a bit of that? There's a lot of people who would need a forklift somewhere down the line.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who don't normally need one. Who, when they think of a forklift, because they follow supercar racing, ta-da.
That's it. So really, and honestly, one of the team that really does it well is obviously Tim Blanchard with Cool Drive. It's the exact same thing. The only thing different, he's marketing his whole car on the side, which I'd love to do one day, but I'll leave that to all the other people and all that sort of stuff. But he's the same. It opens a lot of doors for selling Cool Drive and what they're doing.
Yep, totally. Stuart Lanham's question, have you got any classic or collectible cars in the shed? Do you still have a DJR 320?
There you go. I've got about 14, 15 collectible cars. Mm-hmm. I like all cars. It's not just because I'm GM here. It's all cars. And I've got some, really, really special cars. Obviously, a couple of race cars that we spoke about earlier. I still do have build number 18, DJR 320. It was one of two that were supercharged at the time. Dick had number 17 and I had number 18. And it's like brand new. It's blue and it's still got that one there and it's still sitting in the shed. So it looks great and it sounds good. It's a beautiful car. And it was a lot of money back then. I think there were $100,000 back in 05, which is insane amount of money. So I've still got that. Got a couple of old Mustangs, you know, some pretty special Mustangs. You've got a Shelby and a Boss and a few old Corvette and a GMC truck and lots of old classic cars, some very special cars.
What was your first car as a young bloke?
Honestly, It's a Studebaker truck.
Oh.
And you're ready? I've still got it. It's in bed.
Have you really?
I actually still got it. That was my first car on the road when I was 18, had P plates, and it's actually in Dad's car museum. I've left it down there for the last 20 cool. years, and it's down there with the CS number plates on it. And nice. So, yeah, it's down there at Dad's museum. So, but that's a long time ago, and I had lots of cool cars ever since.
Yeah, cool. What did you learn to drive in? Was it in that?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it nice. Was. Yeah, definitely. Definitely nice. Driving around the streets in Mount Waverley and never forget as a kid running over a dead cat. Never forget Dad yelling at me, "You're going to run over this cat," and, you know, I was only 16.
Well, it was
16,
dead already,
it was
so.
Dead, so, yeah. But, yeah, that's what I learned to drive on and had no power steering or anything like that, manual crash box, and it's an old 63 Studi truck pickup, and it's a cool old thing. And as a kid you put the side pipes on it and all that sort of stuff, so it still looks cool.
That's cooler than a lot of other answers that I've asked people on this podcast about their first car, because generally most of them pause for 3 seconds and then admit to the tiny crap box that they first drove in back in the day. Les Connell, I think you've already answered this. Are you going with 888 Camaros next year?
Yeah, I am, yes. I'm very confident we will. We're not going to build our own cars. I'd like to buy a complete built up.
Not just as a chassis, you want everything on it, in it. Yep. Here it is, put your stickers on it virtually.
Basically, we can put engines in and all that, but a roller, at least a roller.
Yep.
And
no chassis work to be done though.
No.
Yep.
And a lot of teams are building, but I'd say, yeah, there'll be three or four teams that would like a complete roller, just wheel in, and at this stage it'll be 888, yes.
Yep, at this stage. So that yep. could change?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't know the money yet. I don't know how much Jamie's going
to
charge.
Wait, see what Jamie's invoice is.
That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We've just got to work out a deal at this stage. That's the plan anyway.
Blake Cugley, his question is, what's your proudest moment as a supercars owner? We've talked about a few of them, but if you've got to pick one.
Single car team getting the pole at Tassie. That was pretty special.
2019 with Frosty.
Yeah, that was good. Obviously, the championship with James was special. First win with Will Davison. If I've got to pick one.
It's tough, isn't it? That's a rough question.
It is really, really hard.
It's like trying to pick your favourite kid, isn't it? It's like,
there's so many.
Let's say
so
all
many.
Of it. Let's say all of it.
Yeah. There's been some special time. Putting two cars together, I was so proud to have DeWalt and Irwin. Wow, I was really, really proud of going to two cars, owned everything outright, sitting there. It was so special. Having Frosty come on board, Scotty come on board. There's so many special moments. I can't pick one.
You sound like Bruce McAvaney, mate. There's so many specials in that answer. Matthew Norris, actually, you just talked about Scotty Pye then. Interesting one. I've never pondered this, but it should be something that I should have pondered. Matthew Norris's question is, why was Scott Pye given number 20 and not an 18-related number like 81, which is 18 reversed, 118, 218? I never stopped to think about this.
There you go. So it's an easy answer on that one. Very. Mm-hmm. I actually asked for number 20, car number 20. Because DeWalt NASCAR with Joe Gibbs Racing, mm-hmm. who's number 20 as well.
Matt Kenseth was a star
correct.
In the car.
And that's always been the DeWalt cars have always been number 20 until last weekend. Kyle Busch did run 18 as DeWalt as well. So we, because of DeWalt and their sponsorship, and we speak to the US a fair bit about sponsorship and all that sort of stuff, and it was just easy on the memorabilia side, the whole thing of having 20 DeWalt, and it matched the US, so that's the main reason. And yeah, just stuck with number 18 and 20.
Kind of once you got it done, it's an effort to change it, so you may as well stick with it. Lachlan Fowler, this is interesting. We have actually on this podcast before changed people's pronunciation of their surnames. When I spoke to Thomas Mezira, I've always said Thomas Mezira because that's what everyone says. Thomas doesn't really care what you call him, but it's Mezira is the way he pronounces it. Have we been getting your surname right all these years?
Really? Well, there you go. It's actually Schwerkolt, which is, I think, how you say it.
I think that's pretty much how we all said it,
sounds,
isn't it?
It sounds easy to say. Schwerkolt. Schwerkolt. Yeah. It means, I think in German, good horse, I think. So, yeah.
Really?
The colt, Schwer.
Stallion.
That's it. So I think that's what it means. Someone told me that a long time ago, but I think it's easy to say. Schwerkolt.
So if you're wandering around a supercars paddock this year and you hear someone say, "Hey, good horse," you know it's a V8 Sleuth listener.
Larko gets it wrong all the time.
What does he say?
Schwerkolt, I think.
Oh, does he?
I have to pick him up all the time.
Oh, okay. I'll have to have a listen next.
Yeah, you ever listen to Larko? He gets it wrong. Anyway, you can't tell Larko anything.
Just don't let him touch your exhaust like I saw in Tassie a while back.
No.
Wasn't a good look. Stephen Brennan, would you ever set up a Super 2 team using your current cars because they are, you know, no longer required in the main game next year, moving forward into next year?
Look, there is there's a lot of young kids that come and approach us and all that, and I love developing new talent and that you can bring them through. Financially, and also, look, I really want to concentrate. If I'm winning and really on the podium and everything's going great in the main game, absolutely, I'd look at it. We're not there yet, and so let's see if we can get there by the end of the year, or I'll do a deal of selling the cars to a team that I can have a joint program that I can bring some young fellas through and do something. But it's the feeder ground that you've got to keep feeding, and there's some good talent out there. We see the young fellas, look at, you know, the Brody Kosecki's, Will Browns, and these young fellas, and Brock Feeney and all those young kids that are coming through, and it'd be great to have someone coming through because
almost it's a bit like in VFL AFL where there's AFL clubs that might not have a VFL team, but they have an affiliation to. You can kind of go, oh, look, you know, your cars might end up there, but you've kind of got a connection to another entity that, another star entity that comes through. Hey, we want to know about him.
Correct, absolutely. Or but her. there's more to that, more than just keeping the cars. It's another transporter. It's more people. It's all got to stack up. More sponsors and more money it's. I think we're a bit too small, you know, to do that at this stage, but we'll see how we go. I've got options to keep my cars or run them with someone else next year or sell them off. So
good to have options. Absolutely. It's all about options.
Absolutely.
One more, Benjamin Wright. I think this one might have come in on Instagram. What's the fastest you've ever seen a forklift go and any chance a V8 can be put in one?
There you go. Well, strangely enough, Toyota – they got an old 4-ton Toyota forklift and they put a V8 in and it's on display. It doesn't go very fast, but it does massive burnouts and it just sits and just wheel spins. Smoke goes everywhere and it sounds amazing. It really does. But look, a forklift really is designed to lift things, not go fast. You see all those forklift racings on Instagram and all that sort of stuff. It's a bit of fun and tipping over and all that sort of stuff. But I've had a couple of big 12-ton forklifts many, many years ago and they had Chrysler V8s and I'd love it when I was an apprentice as well and put a hole in the muffler and hear this V8 sound up in this forklift. And it's pretty cool to have a V8 in a forklift. And I've always wanted to do it, but Toyota beat me to it and they've got one on display that's floating around. And but 25 k's is the top. I reckon down a hill I might have got to 30, 32 k's an hour down a hill. But they're a bit scary because they're all rear wheel steering, of course, and get the wobbles up. I remember as a kid, I still remember this day, Dad, I was, you know, probably 16, and he threw sump oil to stop the dust at where we are in Mount Waverley and the next door property, and he'd throw this sump, dust everywhere. So I'd go along flat out and I'd just lock the brakes and just slide for like 100 metres, just sliding all the way down the yard, and you'd get murdered these days. Yeah. And I can still hop on a forklift and drive a load of truck. It's part of my life. But I won't be, going any more than about 30 k's an hour, and I wouldn't even do that again.
Safety first.
That's
safety first. Charlie, thanks for sitting down with us. Thanks for having us at Team 18. It's been great to have a chat about your business life, your motor racing life, and hopefully there's a few more trophies for the cabinet at Team 18 for the rest of this year and moving into next year as well in the new Gen 3 phase of the world. So thanks for sitting down with us and all the best for the rest of the year.
Thanks, Noons. It was great. It was really good fun. So cheers.
A big thank you to Charlie Schwerkold. It was great to catch up with him and really appreciated him making some time for us to go back through his motorsport and business catalogue in terms of what he's done and where he's been and what he's seen. A quick reminder too, we love the support that you give us on this podcast, and there's other ways that you can show your support too. If you go to bookshop.v8sleuth.com.au, go shopping. That'll support us as well. We love when you support what we do because it helps us make more podcasts, website stories, books. If you buy them, we can keep making them. Head to the website, bookshop.v8sleuth.com.au. There's a bunch of motorsport books. There's some beautiful pre-owned programs and magazines and other books as well. Model cars, prints, DVDs of old racing, all sorts of cool stuff. And don't forget, Father's Day, Mother's Day, Christmas. There's always a need to put something aside for the future. So jump on the website, check it out and see what is in our range. You can subscribe to our newsletter too via v8sleuth.com.au. Don't worry, we don't bombard you. We send really max 2 a week with links to stories on our site and some of our products in our shop. Follow us on socials, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You know the deal. It's pretty standard now. But we'd love to hear from you. Please send us a note through any of our social accounts or the Contact Us page on our website. Don't forget, every Tuesday, Castrol Motorsport News Podcast. Every Thursday, it's Repco Supercars Weekly. But I'm done. We'll chat to you again next week for another edition of the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Repco.
Every lap in under a minute. Every move made to matter. Every decision impacting the outcome of the race. Supercars in Perth. Every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars. Unforgettable.
Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.